Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you joined us today. Today, it's going to be kind of an interesting show, I think. After some of the stories I told last week and some of the things that we talked about and a couple of the videos that came my way, my granddaughter, who is 17, called me on the phone. And she said, "Graham, I'm trying to find the video of the mom who was that you were talking about, who was beating her 12-year-old daughter with a belt." And I said, "Well, I shared it on my Facebook page. It should be there." When I went back to find it, I could no longer find it either. I talked about it at length, though, last week. I talked about the fact that it looked like this was kind of the norm. The kid being beaten with a belt, because it didn't appear to be something that hadn't happened before. Now, that is purely assumption, conjecture, whatever, on my part. However, when I said to Crystal, I said, "Oh, what did you think about that?" She was like, "Graham, kids, especially younger teenagers, are crazy." She said, "You wouldn't believe some of the things that they're doing." And I said, "Ah, a different point of view," which I love. So we talked, and I said, "I'd love for you to be on the show. I think that you could give us a different point of view, for sure." So she is going to join us this morning. I'm sure she's having trouble getting up, not being a school day, but we'll hear from her shortly. I'm going to bring Shelley in so that we can get the conversation going about this again to remind everybody what we talked about. Good morning, Shel. How are you?
Doing good, Rainey. How are you doing, sweetheart?
Good, good. You and I intended to speak all weekend and never did.
I know. It's been so hectic. I'm just about 98% caught up from being away for almost 2 weeks. So it's today should be a little bit more relaxed, today and tomorrow. So maybe we'll try to catch up today or tomorrow finally.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. I have a kind of a hectic day today as well. I don't know whether they're going to let Mike come home today or not. We're still waiting to hear. But I also am back to back with stuff for Big Spike. He's right at his weakest mode with the last chemo. So I can't let him drive or anything like that. So should be interesting. We'll work it through, though. So quite a conversation. I am en route to Miami, and Crystal calls me on the phone. She goes, "Graham, I've been listening to the one show," because she goes back on the Internet and listens to the shows that are on my Facebook page. And I said, "You are?" And she said, "Yeah." She says, "I can't find the video of the mom that was beating the daughter for showing naked selfies." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "It should be on there. I don't know why it isn't." She says, "You know, Grandma, you always hear about how the parents are beating on their kids, but nobody talks about how bad these kids are." And I thought, well, this is interesting coming from a 17-year-old. She's taking the side of the parent. And I said, "Really?" And she goes, "Oh, my gosh. Graham, you wouldn't believe some of the things that, especially that age, 12, 13, 14, some of the things they're doing." She says, "I know 11-year-olds that are already having sex." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Crystal, you have to talk on the show. You have to give us a different point of view, because Shelley and I think like grown-ups, and even though we're against the abusiveness, we also, you know, think there's another way. And the feedback I got on the Facebook page was, I don't believe in hitting. I don't, you know, I think, what do you teach a child other than, you know, to use violence, you know, to resort to violence for everything that they can't solve with conversation? Take something away from them, especially today when there's so many perks, being a 13-year-old, your cell phone, your computer, your, you know, for boys, it's the Xbox. And I said, that's the way I feel too. But Crystal gave me a whole other point of view. So I'm going to bring her in. She's just called in, but I thought it was interesting that she has such a different point of view. Honey, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You feel like we just threw cold water in your face to wake you up this
morning?
Yeah.
Good
morning, Crystal.
Good morning, Shelley.
So I've kind of given, I know you've been on for a couple minutes, I've kind of given everybody a little scenario of how this came about in the conversation that you and I had. Shelley, how do you feel about knowing that 11 and 12-year-olds are being, you know, active in sex and sexual encounters, et cetera?
I've known about that for a long time. It's actually, I kind of breeze across that quickly in my book, because of a lot of the hormonal imbalances caused by food and drugs today. Kids are maturing physically faster than they mature emotionally. So a lot of them are having sexual drives at very young ages. I mean, there are girls who are starting to menstruate when they're 9 and 10 years old now. That was unheard of when I was a kid. So one of the issues is that children are maturing physically before they're maturing emotionally, and then they have all this stuff in the media and magazines that's giving them mixed messages. You know, the parents are telling them one thing, if they're telling them anything at all. Sometimes there is no coaching from the home front, and they're only being influenced outside by what they see. A lot of the games that are out there are very sexually and violently explicit, things like that. And the other thing that got my attention, you know, and then I want to hear Crystal's outlook on this, is that for this mother to beat her the way she did and film it, first of all, like we said, two wrongs don't make a right. Now this is out there forever. Even if the punishment were justified, and I'm not saying it is, I'm saying even if it were justified, putting that type of humiliation out for the world to see, I think, is unconscionable on the mother's part. If she's saying the selfies were wrong and then she posts something like that, it's disturbing. That's a private matter. She should have found a way to take the videos down as best she could and teach the child why that was wrong without causing that type of fear and humiliation. But the other part of it is that that might be one of the reasons why this little girl is trying to grow up so fast. And the reason I say that is when I was a child, you know, now we're talking, you know, 40 years ago, I had a friend of mine, and we were like 10 or 11. Her parents were like religious fanatics. They were overly, overly, overly strict. And when she was away from the house, she would go a little nuts because she felt stifled in her own four walls. When she was around her parents, she was the good little girl they thought she was. But when she got outside of the house, she was a little bit of a crazy wild child because, like I said, it was stifling for her. So I'm not saying that that's the reason this little girl is acting out and trying to do adult things or what she thinks are adult things. But like you said, it appeared that this wasn't something that was the first time. And maybe she's trying to grow up because she's trying to get away from her mom. And that's a possibility. I mean, I've seen that scenario play out where these children become very, very wild, almost in a rebellious because they're being overly controlled.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Crystal? Now, you heard what Shelley said, and Shelley's saying about the same thing that I say, right in line with what I say. But
well,
you kind of have a different spin on it.
no child deserves to get beat and humiliated and put on the internet for so the whole world could basically see it. Mm-hmm. But if I think that wouldn't have been her first thing to do. I think this girl has probably done something wrong just like before. She's done it repeatedly because, I mean, what she did, that sounds pretty crucial. But I mean, I guess there's parents out there that are like that. But at the same time, there's kids that are 12 years. I know a 13-year-old who was pregnant and has a child who's like 1 year old.
Wow.
And she used to run away from home. She used to go sleep with random guys. She used to go sleep with random guys because she didn't want to be home. Like this random guy she met on the street that would pick her up. She had somewhere to go. And she would just sleep there without even knowing them. And then she would have sex with them for money or so she could stay somewhere. And she had somewhere to go. She had a home. She had a mom. She had a nice house. She just didn't want to be there. I don't know what it is nowadays that make girls so young want to do all this stuff that just will probably mess up your life forever, like having a child at the age of 13. But there's girls nowadays that, I mean, they don't care what people think. And there's so many drugs out there that you can get, anybody can get them. That's how easy it is for somebody to get them. My little cousin, Brandon, he hangs out in a neighborhood, and a little kid came up to him and asked him if he wanted to buy some, like, marijuana or where he could sell it. And the kid's only 13 years old. And the video games nowadays, they are ridiculous. They're terrible. The new Grand Theft Auto, where you drive around in the car, you can pick up prostitutes and go have sex with them. You can go buy drugs and alcohol, and that's how like you rejuvenate yourself in the game. If you die, you go buy alcohol or some type of drug.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
If you die in an accident or an altercation with somebody, you can bring your character in the video game back by alcohol or drugs. Wow.
That's how you come back to life.
Very disappointing to me. When you think of the intellect and the creativity that it takes to create these games, because you have to understand programming and all this other stuff, and then they take that creativeness and ingenuity and they create something that basically promotes violence, crime, destruction, disrespect of life, greed, it's like, and there's so many. I mean, how many of these Grand Theft Auto games are there? There's a whole series of them, right?
Yeah, there's 5 of them.
That's what I'm saying. And it's disturbing to me, number one, disturbing and disappointing that the makers chose to go there instead of creating something that was a little bit, without sounding corny, but something a little bit more wholesome. I mean, you can have all that action, but have the good guys being the winners, not the bad guys. You don't rejuvenate your life by picking off innocent bystanders or getting drunk, I've always been very, very frustrated with that game, and it's not the only one like it, but I guess it's the most graphic and the most well-known of games.
It's getting worse and worse every new game, every game, every sequel that they make, it's just getting worse and worse.
Now, it is rated, isn't it, Crystal? Isn't that game rated for adults or something?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, kids are not allowed to play it. I think you actually have to be a certain age to buy it. But that doesn't mean that you can't get it.
I know. Well, that's the other thing. If parents are going to allow their kids to get that game, I think there needs to be a conversation. And I think a lot of parents don't have that conversation. They just buy the game, because he wants it.
I feel like a lot of parents would buy the game because let's say the parents doesn't buy the game for you. That kid's just going to go to his friend's house and play the game at his friend's house. But, I mean, I guess you would rather want the kid to play the game in front of you so you could explain things that the kid asks, like why they're bad and why you shouldn't do them. If he goes to a friend's house and looks while plays the game and doesn't have anybody to tell him that it's wrong, then I mean, there's nothing you can really do about it. I mean, the people who made the game, it's not their fault. Your parents should teach you what's right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
the game doesn't
help much the parents out, but they should be able to, you know, the world has all this stuff in it, regardless if they're positive or negative. So your parents need to tell you and what you shouldn't do and what you should do, what you're going to see, what you're going to be around, and how you should handle it.
Well, and that's what we've talked about on this show from the get-go, because I've made fun of when I was a kid, young boys that watched The Three Stooges would poke each other in the eyes. People who watched Wile E. Coyote and The Roadrunner thought you could drop an anvil on the head of somebody and they just pop back up again. There, even with that, even though it's a cartoon, you have to be able to look at somebody and say, this is supposed to be funny. You're supposed to just laugh at this and let it go. You really can't, you know, poke somebody in the eye and not hurt their eyes. You really can't drop an anvil on the head of somebody, squish them into a pancake, and then shake them out so they're okay again. You understand that this is supposed to be funny and entertainment. It's the same with Grand Theft Auto. And knowing, besides Grand Theft Auto, my goodness sakes, there's things on TV. How about the girls from Victoria's Secret? When I was a kid, if I saw a girl dressed like that, that one beautiful one where they all have angel's wings and they're wearing underwear that are minuscule, that I, you know, would maybe fit my pinky, right? And they're walking down the runway. When that was called, you know, that was illicit.
Right.
That that's what my father and his friends watched on videos in closed door rooms, because children didn't see that stuff.
Right.
Playboy and things like that were when Playboy first came out, they were coveted by adults and only adults. And if a kid got a hold of his dad's Playboy, he was the most popular kid on the street. And then when things like Hustler came out, oh my God, the first time I saw a Hustler, I was alone because it was in my father's room, and I picked it up and I was like embarrassed for my father and myself that I saw it.
Right.
So
right.
Times have, you know, I mean, for sure times have changed, but Crystal is saying everything, well, of course, she spends time with me, so she does understand about a lot of this stuff because we talk about it. But it is about the parental responsibility to say, you realize that this is just to entertain you. This is, you know, this is not something that you should go out and emulate. It's something that is going to just, you know, be entertaining. So, Crystal, what's the deal with in school? If you know that a 12-year-old is doing the lifestyle that you just mentioned of the girl that doesn't want to stay home, she's 13, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so a 13-year-old girl who is actually giving away her body so that she's got another place to stay, or is offered whatever, anything from alcohol to drugs to probably material things as well. Does anybody at school know that? Are there counselors that would step in if somebody, I mean, are there any teachers that care enough that can see something like that going on, pick up on it, and do anything?
I mean, there's guidance counselors and there's security guards, you know, who know, like, a lot of the students, and they're nice to, so the students tell them things about other students. But other than that, I mean, there's not much you could really do. Talking to somebody, I mean, I've talked to that girl so many times, and she would just, the next time I seen her, she had a baby. So,
wow,
obviously,
boy.
My talk didn't go very well. But she, I don't understand why she did that, because she had a nice house, she had, like, nice things. She lived a bad lifestyle. I mean, I'm pretty sure she had problems, but I didn't see the reason why. I never really met anybody else like that. I mean, I've met a couple girls who, like, go out and party and stuff and, like, just do all these different drugs and have sex with people. They don't even know who their name was. And it's, like, I don't know. I guess I'm used to it because that's how it is nowadays, and that's how it's always been for me. But I don't know why people do it. Like, they live such a nice mm-hmm. life, and they still want to mess them up. But there's just
so many easy ways. Yeah.
Go ahead,
well, of course, you're right. But you're kind of saying that it doesn't, that going to those extremes, going out there and putting a permanent, what's a good word, permanently changing your life and not for the better, doesn't always have anything to do with the life that's being provided for you. They don't have mm-hmm. to come from a home where the parents are gone or the parents are using drugs or the parents are this or that. They don't mm-hmm. have to come from a low-income family. They mm-hmm. can be somebody for all intents and purposes at face value, have a good life, right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you something. What works with you? What works with you? Do you, like, if you know you're doing something that let's go to Grandma, then we don't have to call Mom and Dad out on the carpet. Grandma has a lot to do with things that you do. And if are you more prone to listening to what I have to say instead of having me say, no, you simply can't do that. I don't need to give you my father used to say, don't question me. If I tell you to do something, you just do it. I'm your father. And I try real hard to never say that because I hated it when he said that. Hated it. And
you
my
know,
dad
I mean,
was a
I
good
don't
dad.
That makes sense. I mean, it wouldn't really get you far. Telling, mm-hmm. The one thing I've heard, strictest parents make the sneakiest kids.
Yeah,
that is something that everybody says. Like the strictest parents make the sneakiest kids. The more you are mean to your kid and don't want to know what's going on in their life, the less they are going to tell you.
Exactly.
They won't tell you when they try something, or they won't tell you what happened at a party one time, or you know, come home and actually be able to tell you like, oh, this happened. Because some kids are very scared to say that because they know there are going to be the consequences. Of, okay, well, why were you at that party in the first place? Or why were you with those people in the first place? So they don't really say anything, they just let it go. Because they'd rather not get in trouble than, you know, mess up what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now you can't hang out with those people anymore. But even if you're telling you can't hang out, that's like my mom telling me I couldn't hang out with my best friend because she did something wrong. That doesn't mean I'm going to do it.
Right.
I'm smart enough to know what she's doing is wrong. So I don't want to do it. I mean, there's other kids, though, that they see somebody doing it, and they're like, oh, I want to do it. Like smoking cigarettes. I don't know why people think that is, like, the coolest thing ever. I mean, it smells, it's terrible. It sticks to you like glue.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your hair smell, clothes, everything about you smell, your fingers, everything. But if somebody sees somebody doing it, they want to do it. Even though it'll kill you in a couple of years, who cares? Just
mm-hmm.
to have fun, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense.
Well,
but
yeah. I never understood that either, honey. I never, ever understood that. Crystal also went through a tough time because both parents smoked, and she would be embarrassed when she went to school, and somebody would say, ooh, are you smoking because your hair's... Because she's always had long hair, and she would say... Kids, her friends would tell her that her hair smelled like cigarettes, and
yep.
she hated that. So did Josh. Josh hated that
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yep.
I didn't like that either. I remember feeling that way. I can remember thinking, my mother said to me one time, I said, isn't it funny how everybody has certain smells? And she said, what do you mean? And I said, everybody, all the adults in my life. I was very young when I said this to her. I said, all grandma always smells like she wore Evening in Paris perfume. And she wore mink coats. And if she was on a trip someplace and I didn't see her for a while, and she'd come show up in the middle of the night, I'd be asleep, she'd throw her mink coat over me because she knew I loved it, and it would smell
aww.
Like Evening of Paris. And so it was, you know, for me, that was like a major special memory, a special thing for me. My grandfather always smelled like Old Spice and whiskey.
Yeah.
Old Spice and whiskey. And
yeah.
because he had, by the time I was old enough to really know what was going on with him, he was pretty much ick. He was ill from the lungs and stuff like that. He smoked cigarettes with a cigarette holder. And I never remember him smelling like cigarettes. He always smelled like Old Spice, but he drank whiskey straight to keep him being able to swallow, to get rid of the yuck in his throat. I don't ever remember seeing him drunk, ever, but I could smell the whiskey and the Old Spice. So, and those kind of memories are good for you.
Yeah.
They're, you know, those are special memories, but you can't turn a special memory into somebody smelling like tobacco smoke. It just doesn't have that kind of a smell.
No.
So,
I mean, if you ask anybody who smokes cigarettes, they'll tell you that they're nasty while they're still smoking, mm-hmm. which doesn't make sense. But
I know. That, isn't it amusing, Crystal? It's amusing,
I do. I was with my friend last night, and she forgot her cigarettes at home. And I couldn't believe how many times she's like, oh, my God, I need a cigarette. Oh, my God, I need a cigarette. And I was like, you know, that's terrible. You haven't even been at my house for 30 minutes, and it's like you're fiending for a cigarette. So, But
well,
I mean,
I don't. I never got the cigarette part, but of course we're, you know, this is a family of smokers. You and me and Josh, and I hope Austin, but I'm never sure. I never smell cigarettes on him, but I worry about that. And the really littler ones are it. We're the only ones that don't smoke in this whole family.
And
of course
now, we gotta give him credit.
Yeah, now Grandpa doesn't smoke. Uncle Mike isn't smoking anymore. Yeah. And it does make a difference. I think it does make a difference.
I do too. I hate
cigarettes. So what's going to work with a teenager, Crystal? What's going to work with a teenager from your point of view? Say you know that you're – let's go to 14 because it makes me shudder to think of 13-year-olds because you can't even really explain anything to a 13-year-old. They're too betwixt and between. Too
immature.
Immature, and they're also They kind of get into this mode of not wanting to listen or not wanting to understand anything but what's going on for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's take a 14-year-old and you know, say she's your friend and you know that she's been seeing this same guy and you know that they're getting close. You can tell by their body language and everything. Are you going to say anything to her at 14 for, you know, having sexual relationships with that 14-year-old boy? Are you going to say anything as her friend, or would you stay out of it?
Well, as me being 17 right like now, as in present time, if I seen a 14-year-old, I would say something. I would tell her that she should probably wait. Even if she's been with, like, those guys, girls think that if they're with a guy for, like, a month, that's good. I don't know why they think that, but that means that that's a good, like, long enough for you to have sex with them and, like, sleep over and stuff like that. But, I mean, when I was younger, even my brother's friends came over, I had to sleep in the room with my mom. Even if they were in the living room or in the room, I wasn't allowed to be outside of my mom's vision. I had to sleep with my mom in the room. I would try to tell the 14-year-old to wait a little bit, or at least wait. I mean, not even in high school. you're probably just a freshman at high school. There's so much more to experience and do, so much more things you could do than that. But it's when it's the kind of the people you hang out with, Graham. I mean, if you hang out with the good people, I'm not saying, like, the people that like school and get good grades and actually care about their education, you'll soon start to care. Like, you won't, it's who you hang out with, basically, what makes you do what you want to do, or the way you act the way you want to act, or the TV stars, or all the famous rappers and stuff like that. That's who you want to be, like, so that's where I guess people kind of try to act like them instead of being themselves. Mm-hmm. But it isn't really who you hang out with. Because I've seen girls be angels, and then when they hit high school, totally change into a totally different person. I try to explain that to Amber all the time. That I told her when she was coming into high school that everything would change. Because it changed for me, I know that. Everything changed when I got into high school. I've seen things a lot more different. Things were a lot more realer in high school. Like, you actually seen real things happen. I mean, there's people that who have got caught having sex in the staircase or in the bathroom.
Wow, at school?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
In bushes.
And what happens to them? What happens to them? What are the repercussions for them?
Yeah, suspension. That's about
suspension.
It.
Suspension.
And they don't... I'm pretty sure if you do it multiple times, you'll get expelled. You cannot go back to any Broward County school within the district. You'd have to go to a different district if you wanted to enroll in school again.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't... I mean, if you get caught with, like, drugs on you at school, they make you go to a drug program to be able to come back to school. You can't come back to school without going to the drug program. You have to go to the drug program and go.
Do you think that makes a difference?
For some people. For some people that want it in their head, that they want it so bad, then nothing is going to make a difference. That's already in their head. It's going to take a lot of persuasion and keeping that person away from the people that made him want to do that, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've seen, there was this kid, he was the nicest kid, he got straight A's, he hated his parents. He never really told us
why.
He was a very, he was very strict. And they said when he came home with a B, that wasn't good enough. Or when he got, like, an A-, that wasn't good enough. If he got a 99, that wasn't good enough. And that's what he would tell us. And he wasn't attractive. He was a really skinny, skinny little boy. He was, I don't want to say a nerd, but I guess that's what they're kind of called. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he, like, we would talk to him and everything. And one day he comes to school drunk. And he doesn't do that because you could tell that he doesn't do that. And when he came, first of all, he had alcohol on him. He was carrying it on him. And,
oh, my gosh.
I remember we were on the computers. We were in computer class, and he was really drunk. And we noticed when he walked in, but, I mean, I guess the right thing to do would have been tell the teacher. But we didn't want to get him in trouble. And he knew if we told the teacher, he knew it was us because we were the only ones, me and a couple of my friends were the only ones that knew he was like that.
Mm-hmm.
But after the fact, because the teacher found out, she knew it the second he walked in the room. She said, I've been a teacher for so long. You know how many kids have came in my classroom drunk? She figured it out. And I told the security guard when they came in that it was vodka and it was in a water bottle. So it looked like water, but it wasn't. And I told him, I said, it was in his backpack. And I guess it was gone when they went to look for it. I don't know what could have happened to it, because he fell on the floor. Like,
oh,
we had a couple of security to come and get him. But
wow.
I would have felt extremely bad if I didn't say anything, because he would have went to class, because he has a book bag that stuck out extremely big. He carried, like, 10 textbooks in it. Again, he'd walk upstairs, and I started to. And my teacher, after she called security on it, she was like lecturing us, saying, "Okay, what if he went to walk up the stairs and fell down and broke his neck or broke a leg or you hurt himself bad. And then it, like, it made all the girls next to us think, like, Jesus, you know, that makes a lot of sense. It's a good thing that security got him. He had to go in the ambulance and everything. He had to go get his stomach flushed because that's how much alcohol he drank.
Alcohol poison.
Yeah, but what people don't understand is he was drinking because he was depressed. He wasn't drinking because, of course his friends brought it to him, for him. His friends brought it, and, you know, like, oh, you know, do this, you know, whatever, it'll make you feel better. But that's, he didn't do it because he was a bad kid. He didn't do it because, you know, he had a hard life. He did it because he was depressed, and his parents always thought that he wasn't good enough. And after a while, that would start to get to somebody, especially somebody who was trying their hardest. School isn't easy anymore. I tried to explain that to Mom back in her day. She started learning algebra in sixth grade. I mean, high school. I started learning algebra in elementary school. I tried to tell her that when school is extremely hard and very stressful, and it doesn't make it any easier when parents are down your throat yelling at you. All it does is make you not want to do it. That's all. You're yelling at me in one ear. You get seven teachers telling me I got to do seven different things all at the same time. That's hard. And it's a lot more, they don't give you answers that are in the book. Like, they don't ask you a question that's directly in the book. That's too easy. They're going to ask you questions to where you got to read and you got to think about it, like critical thinking. And when parents are sitting there down your throat yelling at you about what you're doing wrong, all it's doing is making them rebel against you more. Well, at least that's how I feel, and that's what I've seen.
And you're right about that. That is one of the issues, is that, and it this goes anywhere in life, but especially in parenting, when you're trying to explain something to someone, whether it's a coworker. You're a teacher, you're trying to teach a young person, you have to be in their heads. Because when you understand something from doing it or from learning it, you have to understand that there's all these different nuances about that information that you took in over a period of time. Now,
within
you're trying
an hour
to,
worth of class time, yeah.
Right. So now you're trying to explain it to somebody who has no familiarity with that subject at all, and you have to be in their heads. What happens a lot of times, and I've seen this, I've seen it in the workplace and I've seen it in the classroom, is that they try to pass along information, but they're passing it along incompletely because they know all this other information that has to do with it.
It becomes very easy to them.
Exactly, exactly. So, they
harder.
Expect the students to get it faster, but they're giving the information to them in an incomplete fashion, and then they're wondering why they're not getting it on a test or something like that. And it has to do with learning how to teach properly. Like I said, I've seen it with managers at companies, that they tell you half of how to do a task, and then they wonder why it's not getting done properly. And it's the same issue. You're talking about a school teacher teaching children, or somebody in business trying to pass along instruction to somebody that's subordinate to them. It's the same issue, and I've seen it my entire life.
Honestly, I think it's a teacher, like the best kind of teacher that will teach you is somebody, a teacher that students click with. He's not mean, he's not strict, he doesn't, and he likes to teach. There's teachers that don't like teaching, and you can tell. They put the lesson on the board, and they go sit at their desk, and they tell you to read and figure out how to do it. I have a couple of teachers that tell me to. Or if I go up to them and say, I don't know how to do it, figure it out. Because there are teachers that go up there, they teach that lesson one time, and they will not teach it again. And I guess they think it's trying to teach us something in life, something if you only get told it once, so you can't forget it. But that's not fair. Because at the same time, I have to remember biology, history, how to do this in math. Like, there's a lot of things that you have to do. And it's a lot of pressure. All these tests, because we don't have FCAT anymore. We have FCAT reading. Everything else is called EOC. Is now done online.
Oh, wow.
And, it's called end of course assessment, EOC. There's no more paper, none of that. You are on a computer, and you answer the questions like that. They give you a calculator and highlighting, like, to do on the computer yourself. And that's how you have to do it. And if you don't pass, if you don't pass the end of course assessment, even if you have gotten A's every quarter the whole year you've been in school, every semester you got an A, if you fail that test, you fail that class. You know, even if you got straight A's.
That shouldn't be the determining factor. It should be a percentage of the grade, because some people just aren't good with tests.
They know the information,
and then they freeze up on test day.
That's how I am, and that's what I tried to explain to my mother. But like I said, she doesn't know how school is nowadays, so we don't.
Yeah,
it's a lot harder.
Well, and in the same token, you know, when you speak to grown-up, I want to stick up a little bit for some of the grown-ups that I know. Their intentions are good, but remember, learning, teaching, comprehension is a lifelong venture, lifelong. It means like some two-year-olds, you can look at a two-year-old, hold their hand and say, don't ever touch this because it will hurt you. And they will never touch it. They will never touch it. They look at you eye to eye. They get it, and they never touch it. I would promise you at age 30, if somebody asked them to touch something that was said to them about it that long ago, they still won't touch it. Then you have another child. You look at them and hold their hands, same thing, and you say, don't touch this. It will hurt you. The minute you walk out of the room, they want to see how bad it's going to hurt them or how it's going to hurt them. Or if it's going to hurt really bad, or if they're tough enough to take it, and they're going to touch it. And that's the way they'll do their whole life. The minute they know that you don't want them to do that, but you don't actually give them, I don't know, an example of how it's going to hurt them, they have to find out for themselves. It's their makeup, you see. Your father and Uncle Mike, I would say to your father, don't touch that. Your father wouldn't touch it. If I told Uncle Mike not to touch it and walked around the corner, I'd look back in and there he'd be just about ready to touch it. Every time. Every time. And that kind of makeup doesn't change. So let me ask you something. If you have always been a good little girl when you were a baby, you didn't do anything that, I mean, you didn't have to get spanked for anything. You didn't have to get screamed at for anything. If you and your two brothers were outside playing, they were the ones that almost always got in trouble, right?
Yes.
Your brothers. So it is different. Your personal makeup makes things different, and it does make a difference as to how you listen to things. Some people are like, you know, show me, or prove it to me, or give me an example. It might hurt you, but it probably won't hurt me. Do you see that kind of intellect that does that?
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. Let's do a scenario. You have a girlfriend. She's been your best friend for years and years and years, and I kind of know that this has already happened to you before. And they're about to make a choice, or let's take that away. They're doing things that bother you. They're not taking care of themselves. Maybe other friends are talking about them because they're doing things that are embarrassing to you, because you hear other people that pretend to be their friends talking about them. You ever been in that scenario, honey?
Yeah, all the time.
Of course, a million times, right?
Yeah.
So are you going to go to that friend? Are you going to say to them, listen, we have to talk about something? And if you did do that, how do you think you would make them understand? And have you ever done it before? And if you did do it, did it make a difference?
Well, I guess it kind of would depend on what the person is saying about the other person. Like, I mean, if they were talking bad about how they dressed or the way they acted, I guess it would kind of, if it bothered me or not. I mean, I have a couple friends who are obnoxious and they cuss a lot, and it drives me insane, especially when they cuss around, like, if we're in public and you're cussing, repeatedly. It drives me insane because people look at you like you were raised with no class at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it makes you wonder how their parents are, but you go meet their parents and they're totally not like that. It's just the kid on, that's who they are. I mean, sometimes there's not really much you could say to change it, but I would probably mention something to them. I wouldn't say who told me. I wouldn't say, you know, oh, this person said that you do this and this. Is it true? I would, like, come up with something to bring the conversation up or something like that. I mean, I'm pretty close with my friends, and I tell them the truth. If they don't look good in the outfit, they don't look good in the outfit. It's not working for you. Go put something else on. That's it.
Well, that's good for you. That makes you a better friend, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm not going to let her walk around looking ugly. So, I mean, I would hope one of my friends told me that I looked ridiculous if I looked ridiculous. So,
We ever hear the cliche, Crystal, that only a true friend will tell you when you have dirt on your face?
Yeah.
You know, and that really is true. A lot of people won't tell somebody when they have dirt on their face because they don't want to embarrass them. Meanwhile, they're letting them walk into a board meeting where everybody's going to have dirt on their face. So why wouldn't you embarrass them for 10 seconds to prevent them from getting embarrassed?
Something they're comfortable with instead of going out in public and having random people. That a first impression means everything.
But
so
that also means about how we behave. You know, it's a metaphor, you know, saying you have dirt on your face. It also has to do with telling them when they're not acting in a way that's beneficial to them, when they're acting in a way that can cause them embarrassment or harm or getting in trouble, you know.
Well,
so it's really a metaphor for any of those things. And when you're a true friend, you do kind of look out for them and let them know when they're making bad decisions.
Of course. I mean, I've not all of my friends, I've always told them if they were doing something wrong or if they looked ridiculous, I told them. I mean, that's the kind of person I am. If I don't like something, I will be the first person to say something because I'm uncomfortable. And I've always taught to say something when I feel uncomfortable. But there's people who take it differently. You could tell somebody that you don't like their outfit and they'll turn it around and be like, well, you know, why not?
You're just jealous.
Yeah, and I'll explain to them, like, well, either you're too big to wear that or you're too small or, you know, just that's not your style. And some people take it wrong. And if they do, that's fine. Like, if that's what you want to wear, I'm telling you that you look ridiculous. But if that's what you want to wear, that's what you want to wear. I mean, you can't really care about how people think about you all the time. I mean, there's times grandma knows I want to go to Publix in some sweatpants and my hoodie, and I don't want to get changed. I don't want to brush my hair. I don't want to do anything. But, I mean, I do because I'm made to. But there's sometimes where I don't. But there's sometimes that I won't go outside without putting makeup on. I don't want to go anywhere until I got my face on. Right, Graham? My face on. I need to get. But some people don't. They just find it. Once something is stuck in somebody's head, it's very hard to get it out.
Yeah.
Like I said, like Grandma said, they have to learn it from their experience. Obviously, my experience isn't enough for them, so they have to just learn it by themselves. But,
and I think a lot of it goes to a lot of what we talk about on this show also, is that today, more than ever before in history, there is so much outside influence on children, you know, because of games, because of what's on TV, because of what you see in magazines, because of what you see in the movies, you know, and there's no clear-cut right and wrong anymore, it almost seems to me. There's so much gray area out there today of what's considered acceptable behavior, and even with a lot of the shows on TV that seem to be geared towards children that really aren't, some of these animated shows, and they really give mixed messages about being decent and looking out for each other. You know, there's so many, it's almost like the slackers are being, you know, are the ones that are getting everything, you know, to go their way. It's almost like bad behavior is being rewarded. So it's really more important than ever now for parents to just have conversations with their kids. Number one, like you said before, let them know that you can talk to me about anything. If you do something and you think you screwed up and you're afraid of getting in trouble, I want to be the first person to know about it, because I'm saying there's not going to be a consequence, but what I will say is I'll help you get through it. But I, as your parent, love, you know, and
you
if you
do that.
Right.
Yeah, you have to, that's like, I would go to grandma before I went to my parents, because I know grandma wouldn't jump straight to conclusions. Like,
exactly.
If you,
so
if
my
I
mom
go to
like,
tell some, yeah, if I go to tell somebody to my mom, she's not even going to let me finish the story. She's going to be like, oh, well, this, and this happened. We're not even letting you finish the story. And then once that's already in their brain, you know, it's kind of hard to get that away. I will, you know, grandma knows. I call her if my finger hurts, if my tongue hurts, if my toe hurts, I call grandma. And I need to know what to do at this time to make it feel better. Like, I burned my finger the other day. I call my mom. She tells me to put butter on it. I call my dad. He tells me to put it in water, cold water. I'm like, okay, I need to talk to my grandma, because everybody's all over the place, and they just don't know what they're talking about. So I need, you have to be able to talk to your parent. You have to be able to trust them and know that they're not going to go tell all the other family members, and they're not going to judge you.
Right.
Because you tell your parent one thing, and then you never know, a couple months later, they'll bring it up, oh, well, you did this, or, well, you know, try to turn it back on you. And I know grandma's not going to do that. She didn't.
Right.
She won't judge you, and like judging a book by its cover. No matter what you've done, she's still going to try to find the good in you.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and that's one of the things that always made me respect your grandmother so much, is that exactly what you just said. No matter what's happening, and even if somebody did something blatant, she always tried to find the good in that individual, and you know, bring them to task for whatever they did that was wrong or inappropriate or whatever, but also bolster them at the same time, saying, look, you've got these good qualities, you screwed up over here, but let's not dwell on that. We got to fix that, you know, and let's concentrate on developing your strengths. And if more parents would do that with their children, you would have less stress about kids. Kids make mistakes. They shouldn't be afraid of making mistakes. That's how you learn to be an adult. That's how you learn to deal with things in the future. If you never make a mistake, you never learn how to correct things and how to rectify things. It's part of life. People make mistakes. We're not computers, you know. And if more parents would take that approach with their kids, you'd have a lot less kids turning to drugs and turning to this outrageous behavior just because they're afraid of going back to their home base and saying, look, I did something and I think I did something wrong, or I think I may get in trouble. So it's really, really important for parents to make their kids safe talking to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot, I mean, beating a child is not the answer. I mean, I've never been beat, but I've never did anything outrageously wrong. My best friend, when I was in middle school, about sixth grade, her dad beat her. Dad beat her. She would come to school with bruises all over her neck and around her face, but she never told you what she did. She never told you that she would sneak boys in. We're in sixth grade. We just got out of elementary school.
Wow.
And how she would sneak boys in her house, and how she was already having sex, and how she was smoking cigarettes or getting into fights. She never mentions that. I mean, you automatically feel bad. I mean, beating a child is obviously not the best consequence. There's other things you could do. But it gets to the point to where those things don't work anymore. You're grounding me and sending me to my room where my computer is, where my TV is, where my cell phone is, where my cell phone charger is, where everything I possibly could ever need is in my bedroom. And that's where you're sending me right now? So like, parents just don't even think about it. Like, okay, go to your room, you're grounded. Okay. Like, me, that would be perfect. I don't go outside. I hate outside. It's too hot for me. Me and the sun just don't get along. I like to stay inside. I like my air conditioning, and I like my TV. So if my mother grounds me, I don't even see it as a foundation. I see it as, okay, you're telling me I can't go outside, which is fine. I mean, there's some kids that can't live without going outside. They have to go outside. They can't sit inside all day. But if they're most likely the parent isn't beating them for no reason. I mean, there is parents out there, obviously, but a lot of the kids that I've met have done some pretty big things for their parents to beat them. They've done things repeatedly, and things that kids that at that age shouldn't be doing. I knew a girl who her dad was a drunk, and he beat on her and her sisters. But when the cops came, and the cops asked them, they would say, no, he doesn't. That's what my best friend did. I called the cops, and they came to my house and everything. And I said right in front of her, her father beats her. And they looked at her, and she said no. And that was the end of the conversation. They took her back to the car, back to the house. No problem. Without even,
well,
they didn't care.
You know, Crystal, that's a big illness out there. The guilt that is felt by a spouse or by a child, the embarrassment, they often deny that. But one of the things about your conversation is, of course, everything that I hear you saying, everything that Shelley has said today, and everything that we've said in the past, the best thing anybody can do for themselves is communicate. The best thing that anybody can do to help someone else is to listen. Communication and hearing. Hearing what somebody is saying to you. Really, really listening. Not conjuring up in your mind the big, long sermon you're going to give after the fact, because then you're not listening. You're not concentrating on what's being said to you. You're already thinking about what your return is going to be. And that adults are guilty of that. We're all guilty of that to a certain extent. The biggest blessing anybody can give to their child, even if they're two, when they say, Mommy, 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 tugging on the side of your skirt or your pants or whatever, or they're crying, is to look at them and say, what's going on? And then really pay attention to what's going on. And that doesn't stop. That doesn't stop when they're 45. That doesn't stop when they're 46. Take it from somebody who knows. So it's all about listening and asking a few questions, but then shutting up and hearing what's being said to you. Now, if I went through some of those things, promiscuity, I once opened one of my kids' door, and there were three girls in there. And I don't know what was about to happen. Thank God I got there early. But, you know, I didn't – you don't always know how to handle something, especially if it's the first time it's ever happened. And a lot of times you do it poorly. But you should learn from that. But I agree with you. I'm against physical abuse. I'm also against mental abuse. But I do think that as a parent, it's your responsibility to make sure your child doesn't, first of all, do anything that's going to ruin their life. And a lot of the things we talked about today will set a precedence in your life that will never, a stigma that will never, ever, ever leave you.
Right.
Never. Talk to some adults. Talk to some adults who made choices on the spur of the moment or just because it seemed like everybody else is doing it, so I'm going to do it too. Bad choices.
Yeah.
Crystal, I want to make a deal with you that you're on the show once a month and give Shelley and I a perspective about teens. Will you do that? You can have girls join you, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that'll be no problem during school time.
Okay.
Because I get it that way early anyway. But today,
good.
Oh, Lord, today was hard.
Today was
today
tough
was
getting
hard.
Up this early, huh?
My alarm
well,
was going off,
you.
And I'm like, what is going on right now? I didn't even know. I don't even told you that would even happen. But I got up, and I was like, and
you're my
like,
girl, honey.
I'm like, okay.
And you did a great job.
Thank you.
You did a great job. Great job. And you're very articulate, and you really know how to express yourself, which makes grandmother very proud. So,
oh, I love this in the background.
So everybody go out there and have a great, great day. Thanks, Shell. Busy day today, but let's spend some time together tonight, okay, on the phone?
Sounds good. And if I don't hear from you tonight, we'll make it tomorrow. So
don't
it happen if it's too hectic.
Okay.
So
God bless
thanks, everyone.
Everybody.
Crystal,
have a great
day. Hearing from you, Start.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Did a good job, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent.
Bye-bye, everybody.
All right, bye, guys.
God
love
bless.
You.
I love you, too, honey. Bye-bye. She did.